As a business leader, you know attracting top talent is just the beginning. Real growth happens when you lead yourself and others well. Creating a company culture that attracts, nurtures, and retains the best of all things. We'll teach you how to make an impact through a holistic leadership approach. Reframing success in leadership. This is the Talent Magnet Institute podcast with your host, Mike Sipple Jr.
Thank you for joining us on this week's episode of the Talent Magnet Institute podcast. I'm excited to be sitting across from a mentor of mine, Mary Stageman, Vice President of Inclusion at the Cincinnati USA Regional Chamber. Mary is also on the board of directors for ArtsWave, Findlay Market, and Ensemble Theater. Mary, thank you so much for joining us today.
Oh, I'm glad to do it, Mike. Thanks for having me.
I have been so encouraged over the last, I would say, maybe 10 years of my career, really trying to think through how do I bring my best and how do I help others bring our best in this community? And you have been one of those that's been paving the way that our firm respects so greatly. And I'm really excited today to talk about building cultural competency and what it looks like to truly lean into an inclusive community and how do we help create vibrancy for all? And how do we as leaders, those that are listening today, how can they make an impact on this conversation? So we hope that those listening in today will walk away with some tangible things that you can execute, but also things that are going to make you think and going to make you explore your own personal heart, your own personal strategies. And then hopefully that shows up in your business strategies and the way you operate with your team. So Mary, can you share with me a little bit about the current cultural competency program that the Chamber's offering and where that has kind of led out of?
Absolutely. It's interesting. We're in a transition stage on that program. I'm very excited about where it's going next, but let me go back to sort of the beginning and explain why we created it in the first place. Mm-hmm. You may remember that in 2012, we released a report called Diverse by Design, Meeting the Talent Challenge in a Global Economy. Mm-hmm. And that report was intended to take stock of where Cincinnati, and when I say Cincinnati, I'm always speaking of the entire 15-county region, but where Cincinnati was on the process of population diversification, workforce diversification that we knew was happening around the country. But we wanted to know whether it was happening at the same rate and, frankly, fast enough here in the Cincinnati market. Because we really believed that in order to remain competitive as a region, that we had to create a workforce that looked like where the country was going instead of where it had been. So we went really deep, and we could spend the whole day talking just about the outcomes of the research, but I will cut to the chase and say that we really discovered in the research that Cincinnati's population was changing, but not at the same rate as the United States as a whole, that we were still largely a majority white population, and that if we continued on that same path, we really did risk our ability to attract and retain not only talent, but the top companies that have always been part of this market. Mm. So I like to say that if we think the companies that have always been here will always be here because they've always been here, we're not paying attention. So we put a challenge in front of the community and said, what can we do to get intentional about changing this picture? Because the data that we had isn't destiny, it's directional. And so we said, if we were to get more intentional about the work of diversifying our workforce and building a more inclusive community, we could accelerate the pace of change. And today, when we look around, Hamilton County today, our principal county, is 33% multicultural. It's amazing to me that that kind of transition has happened in just the last few years. So coming back then to the cultural competence program, a key insight, Mike, from our original research was, and we heard this from chief human resource officers and chief diversity officers, but we also heard it from hundreds of greater Cincinnatians that we talked to in a qualitative research process. And what they told us, whether they were new to the community or had been here for several years, is that Cincinnatians are an incredibly hardworking group of folks, and we are generous to a fault. You know, we have the largest, one of the largest United Ways in the country, among other things, and the largest United Arts Fund. So we're very generous. We volunteer our time. We're extremely polite. But I think this is really, and I say this as a native, so I'm including myself in this group. I think that we, because our population is not highly diverse, we have not needed to develop the kind of skills that we talk about when we discuss cultural competence. The ability to change our communication style and the way that we interact with individuals to bridge difference, whether that difference is cultural or whether it's political or whether it's generational, that is a set of skills that we're not born with, because we really are born with the ability or the desire to seek our own, to find our tribe. So bridging difference is a skill that we have to be taught. It's taught today in business schools, so we will have a new generation of leaders who know how to do this. But for those of us that didn't get it back in school or back in college, it's something that we lack, but it's something that can be taught. And that's the really good news. And what we know now is that we can bring people to higher levels of cultural competence in a fairly short period of time. So the program that we've developed is called Building Cultural Competence, a Program for Leaders. And that second part of the name is really important. While we'd love everyone in the region to have high levels of cultural competence, we believe that by focusing on leaders, and that can be everything from a senior VP at a local bank to a pastor at a local church or a PTO president or the leader of a nonprofit, you get the idea. These are individuals who have circles of influence. So when they go back in the community with a deeper understanding of the things that get in our way, like implicit bias, and better skills for leaning into crucial conversations and difficult conversations, those kinds of skills then get magnified because they echo out through their circles of influence. So we think of these leaders like pebbles in the pond. Mm-hmm. And we know what happens when we drop a pebble in the pond. We get ripples of effect.
That's wonderful. Yeah, one of the opportunities that we have with the podcast is get to interview amazing people that are really leaning into this work. We believe at the Talent Magnet Institute, it even goes into our branding, mm-hmm. that the more inclusive we are, the more thoughtful we all are about engaging and bringing out the best in all people, mm-hmm. the more our world is stronger. Mm-hmm. And the more we can also feel good about that, that we've made that impact. I know when we interviewed Dr. Janet Reed in episode 19, she mentioned that diversity is meaningless without inclusion. Are you creating the kind of workplace that does both? And, you know, many people we've hung our hat on, oh, I understand what diversity is and what it looks like and feels like, but we still haven't brought the inclusion part out, right. And how that looks and how we impact. And in our organizations, where are we gaining our ideas? Who feels valued? Who feels that their voice is heard and that they can share? And as we know, being a part of that work, the more you bring out the best in all people, in an organization, in a community group, even in a neighborhood or a school,
right.
The more you let the better, the higher, the greater the impact on the organization, the better ideas come to the forefront, and we all learn and innovate from that. And it feels really good, too, that we're building inclusive relationships. I know that Dr. Reed, and I was speaking to a leader just last night on the same exact topic around, you know, look at your community and who your kids are hanging out with.
Right.
And what does your dinner table look like? What do your holidays look like? I was having a great conversation this week with Dr. Chantel Thomas. Mm-hmm. And we were talking about that. And I was like, wow, that is something we need to continue to promote. You know, let's continue to promote of what our dinner tables look like and how inviting are we to our community and who do our children hang out with? Who do our grandchildren hang out with? And let's encourage them to help influence the future generation for this topic as well. Where do you see, I know you mentioned that we're a very giving community. And again, those that are not in Greater Cincinnati, we actually, Mary, as of this recording, we have touched leaders in 61 countries with our podcast.
Astonishing.
And over 12,000 listeners.
Right.
And one of the things that we've learned is that although a lot of the interviews are based on concepts that are taking place in activity in Cincinnati, one, Cincinnati's at the forefront of many of this work and from a world perspective, and other communities are learning just as much where they are, whether it's in Amsterdam or whether it's in Germany or Italy or Nashville or Chicago. Mm-hmm. And we've heard from our listeners that, wow, this relates so much to me. Mm-hmm. But you mentioned the giving community that Cincinnati is. You also mentioned the polite nature. It's almost like we don't want to say anything because we don't want to offend or we don't want to hurt anyone's feelings. And it takes us back to old ways of thinking and old schools of thought and questions we ask one another that may not be the most inclusive and thoughtful questions anyway, right? Or welcoming questions. Are there any examples you can share that you feel like our community needs to kind of grow past at this point?
It always gets me in trouble, Mike, when I go to this next place, because it is so ingrained in the way we interact in Cincinnati. But I understand now from working with peers around the country that we're not alone in this particular interaction, but it does seem to be something that's really prevalent here. And that is that most Cincinnatians, when meeting someone for the first time, will ask the question, where did you go to school? And when we ask that question, we mean high school. And at its best, that kind of a question is actually something we could say that it just says something about how loyal we are to our schools and to our neighborhoods. We're a region of neighborhoods, right? So in that regard, it's a positive thing. And I think it's a way for people to connect. And sure enough, the minute you name a local high school, somebody's going to say, well, what's your last name again? And, oh, I bet I knew your sister, or did you go to school with so-and-so? And so it's a shorthand for bridging a gap, which is something we want people to do. But if you put that in the context of an interaction between a native Cincinnatian and a newcomer, the question takes on a whole different context. So first of all, it confuses newcomers because they think when they hear school, they think, well, I went to University of Virginia. And people go, no, high school. And then when that person responds in confusion with the name of the high school that they go to, then more often than not, and we've heard this over and over again, so I'm not speaking just from my own point of view. I've heard this and actually documented it in research that our response tends to be confusion on our part about, well, I don't know that school, so I don't know how to frame you. And so the conversation ends. In regions where there are high percentages of people from other places, where the in-migration of people from other communities and around the globe is greater. So take Denver, where about 40% of the population has moved there from someplace else. The first question that people are asked is, where are you from? And then the answer is a starting point to say, well, what's that like? And what brought you here? And how can I help you get connected? And so as we think about helping people to become more culturally competent, we try to give them skills that get beyond that question. Mm-hmm. And frankly, for me, I'll be totally honest, as a mature professional, when someone asks me that question, I think, well, gee, I don't want to answer it because that's going to put me in a box that might have been true about me when I was 17, but certainly isn't true about me today. So if you ask the question and you get an answer that is unfamiliar, we want people to have the second question and the third question and the fourth question. Several years ago, Lucy May from WCPO interviewed me about this, and it created quite a firestorm on their Facebook page with people who felt like we shouldn't get rid of the question. And so Lucy did another piece about it, just about the reaction. And her solution was to suggest that perhaps we should change the question about where you went to high school and substitute it with, would you like a cheese coney? And for those folks who are listening around the world, cheese coney is a very famous Cincinnati food opportunity.
Yeah, I think there's two things there. I'll just draw from my personal experience. And this may get some quite a response too. You know, so I grew up in Covington and I went to Holmes High School. Mm-hmm. My family's business was always up till just recently in downtown Cincinnati. Uh-huh. And then we were in Kenwood for the last 11 years. Right. But growing up, I would leave Holmes High School, drive up Vine Street to go to mom and dad's office in the Kroger building. Mm-hmm. And they were there for 17 years. So, you know, one, when the question's asked of me, it's like, well, I went to high school in Northern Kentucky.
Yeah.
And people go, oh, okay. Like you don't even have to answer the high school. So to your point, they're looking for, did you grow up in my rival? Like it just immediately creates disconnect. And that's the part of the inclusion, you know, the unconscious biases, the cultural competency. We're trying to, the point of our communication should be about connecting us to similarities or learning about, wow, that's really interesting. What was it like to grow up there? Mm-hmm. And I always say I'm a proud product of Covington. And I talk about
it. I am a proud product of Cincinnati.
That's
absolutely
right. But the nature of that conversation, even for a local, even for the locals, I mean, it creates these divides. And interesting in the dialogue that we had with Dan Hurley in episode 18, he talked a lot about walking in other people's shoes. The impact that we need, we can't understand the world to its fullest until we walk into other people's shoes. And I know he talks a lot about there is history in Cincinnati that was divided. And we're trying as a community, let's stop that. Like we are the leaders of today. Wherever you are in your community, you're the leader of today. We don't need to think about what we hope happens in 20 years. We can change this today and begin using our skills and our communication style. And to be frank, our own hearts, a heart change around, you know, maybe if I work today just to connect with other people, it could change those that I see this afternoon, right? And we can change this today. Everybody listening, if we go out with 12,000 listeners, we can go out and start changing the world now with topics. So let's start adjusting our skill. And maybe we're hoping today that you will actually learn some of these particular skills that Mary's bringing up and that we're talking about to just go and see how this changes behavior, how this impacts communication.
Yeah. So I think the journey, and you've just alluded to something that we often say in this work, and I'm sure you heard it from Dr. Reed and others, but focusing on inclusion is not just the right thing to do, it's the smart thing to do. We know, and you talked about this earlier, that diverse teams perform better and companies that are more inclusive have better bottom lines. But there's no doubt that there's a moral component to this as well, for us to embrace the stranger and to make sure that everyone in our community has an opportunity to thrive and to contribute and to be an active member of this place we call home. And so I think the topic of inclusion and the challenge for leaders is to look at it in two ways. One is the personal. Each of us is on a learning journey when it comes to inclusion. It's a journey that never ends. We can learn something new in a heartbeat. We can be humbled in a moment by our own inability to understand a cultural difference, for instance, or to be in a situation that's unfamiliar. If you've been in the majority all your life, walking into a room and all of a sudden being in a minority is a powerful experience. And so our ability to stay in that moment, to learn from it, to say, what could I do better here? What could I do differently? How am I presenting myself? How am I engaging with the people around me is part of the process. And going back to your metaphor about the table, it actually literally makes a difference when we think about who do we invite to the table? You know, what do our social gatherings look like? I got a thank you note after the holidays from a colleague, a woman of color who was invited to my home, and it was a lovely note thanking us for, you know, a lovely party. But the part that both uplifted me but also made me sad was that there was a PS on that thank you note that said, this is the first time in the time that my husband and I have been in Cincinnati, and they've been here 7 or 8 years, that we've been invited into a private home for something that wasn't business or a fundraiser. And I think it says something about a need for us to reach beyond those familiar faces, those circles that we grew up with, and to literally change the seats around the table. I'll tell you what, it makes for much better dinner conversation, much more interesting parties. But taking it back then to the professional, I think that as we as individuals start to grow and develop and understand and have our antenna up about when we might be making assumptions, when bias might be operating, when we be, reading too much into someone's appearance or behavior in a way that gets in the way of being inclusive. Then we take it up to the leadership level. And I think that any organization that aspires or any community that aspires to be wholly inclusive must have leadership that is culturally competent, that understands how you build an inclusive organization, that is willing to be on the record in opposing things that diminish people, that make it difficult for them to thrive, a leader who is willing to take strong stances when there is discrimination going on, to understand the systemic issues that perpetuate isms in our world, like racism, to understand that while we don't want to live in a world where everyone thinks alike. I mean, we often say at the chamber that if we create an organization where everyone in the organization thinks the same way, then we will have failed. We want to leave room for opposing political views. We want to leave room for a wide range of faith traditions, for instance. But we will have expectations of behavior for people in our organization. So if your faith tradition doesn't accept gay marriage, for instance, I'm not going to tell you that you need to change your faith tradition, but I'm going to have an expectation that in the workplace that you will treat our LGBTQ employees with the same respect and dignity that you treat anyone else. And for those of us that may come from a more, I don't have a better word for it, a more sort of liberal tradition, we need to be sure that we make room in our behavior and in our hearts for people whose views may be more conservative than ours, may be different. And that, you know, there are a lot of ways to parse that out, but fundamentally, it's about respect for the dignity of the other person and their beliefs as much as our own.
In terms of opening up individuals' eyes on this topic, I know one of the things that we've heard a lot about in one of our early podcast interviews in episode 24 with Paul Miller, who owns Circus Mojo and Birkus Beer. Paul has had, he went to CoveCath and he somehow the world turned on to him that the world was bigger than the environment he grew up in. And Paul's known in the state of Kentucky as an individual who brings more green card holders into the state than almost any other business. In terms of the variety and diversity of countries, he brings people in from all over the world. And he talks about that in the world he grew up in terms of circus, one of the things that's for sure is when you're on a tightrope, it doesn't matter where you came from, what religious beliefs you have, or what you look like. If you're supporting me on a tightrope or, 100 feet above the air, I have to trust you. And we have to have trust with one another. Mm-hmm. And he talks about the impact of having team building in this environment, that getting cross-functional teams and getting people who don't normally work together. If you're put in a situation where we have to work together and we need to do this in a way that we're, in his case, dealing with life safety, it's a great way to open the eyes of, why do I care so much about the differences? However, we also have talked about in previous episodes that when you're raised, it is that where you find protection. Right. So the environment you grew up in feels, quote unquote, safe.
Right. Absolutely. And we're hardwired for
that. And that then hardwires you to believe that, well, this is the environment I feel safest in. And then we've also encouraged the conversations, right? That like it's okay to ask conversation about, you grew up in Pakistan. I grew up in Nashville or Virginia or Washington, D.C. And it, you know, what does that like? The more we can get to know one another, the more we gain a great deal of respect for one another's differences.
Well, and I think you're talking about the difference between true inclusion, which is to leverage the differences among us, instead of expecting, if we are in the so-called majority culture, everyone else to assimilate. And I'm reading Brené Brown right now. Mm-hmm. And just yesterday on the treadmill, she was talking about leading an international team and connecting with them via, you know, media or on a digital way. And one of the things that she pointed out was that there were some challenges in the team. And in exploring why those challenges existed, discovered that there was a cultural stumbling block, and one of her teams on the other side of the globe was struggling simply because they weren't getting agendas in advance of the meeting, and so they felt ill-prepared and were unwilling to speak up. And sometimes those cultural differences have to do with concepts of time. Sometimes they have to do with concepts of fun. They can have to do with respect for faith tradition and some of the other things we've been talking about. But to not understand them is to get in the way of creating places where people can bring their whole selves to work. But I want to go back to something else you said, Mike, because you brought up immigrants and how important they are to mm-hmm. the circus, but they're really fundamentally important to our region.
Oh, absolutely.
And they're absolutely, they have to be part of our growth strategy and our competitiveness strategy for this region. We took 60 leaders to Toronto last fall. And I think the thing that they were most struck by is that every place we went, every leader we heard from said, Toronto is 51% foreign born. You can imagine how that kind of population mix changes the way that region feels. And it was the secret to their tremendous growth. Their population is enormous today, and that growth has largely come from immigration. It is happening here too, even when people don't realize it. Our first year of positive net migration into the region in a number of years was 2017. And about 80 or 85% of that positive net migration was from immigrants. And why does that matter? Well, immigrants are disproportionately studying in the STEM disciplines. They are the people who are staffing our hospitals and building our bridges and designing our cars and so on and so forth. In fact, in the state of Ohio, one in four doctors today went to a foreign university or university outside of the U.S. So we know how important immigrants are becoming to our community. And they also are disproportionately entrepreneurial. They are much more likely to start their own business than a native-born. So between the year 2000 and 2013, 100% of all of the new Main Street businesses, you know, lifestyle businesses, beauty parlors, and we don't call them anymore, salons and restaurants and all those things that enliven a neighborhood, 100% of those in this region were started by immigrants, even though our total immigrant population is about 4.7% of the overall regional population. So they're having an outsized impact, and they're adding vibrancy to our community in ways that we should all benefit from.
Absolutely. Yeah. And helping individuals. I know in Northern Kentucky University's case, how much their international student program is one of the best in the world.
Yeah, they have a high population from Saudi Arabia, as a matter of fact.
And how do we reach out? There's actually a program to connect individuals from other countries at NKU with, they want our listeners, if you're in the area, to actually reach out to them and say, hey, you know, at Thanksgiving, we've got three extra seats, or we've got something happening this weekend. We want to welcome people from not in the community. If we can do that, we make people feel welcome. We make people build like what we all want, a relationship, a connection, and a place to call home.
Well, and it's so important that cities around the country have, over the last number of years, gotten into the welcoming business, and many of them have established organizations whose sole purpose is to make sure that immigrants are integrated into the population as quickly and as effectively as possible. So that's why we at the Chamber partnered with Mayor Cranley in Cincinnati a couple of years ago on his task force on immigration, and then created out of that an organization called Cincinnati Compass. And the whole purpose of Compass is to connect immigrants and internationals to our community and to make sure that they feel at home. And we join many other cities around Ohio and around the Midwest and ultimately around the country who are welcoming the stranger. And in fact, Cincinnati was recently ranked 18 out of 100 metros for the ways in which it is successfully creating policies and programs that welcome immigrants to the community.
Wow, that's incredible work. Thank you for leading the way on that.
Well, today we have other leadership taking, taking that ball, but it was really wonderful to be a part of creating it. And it introduced me to a whole community of organizations and people who have worked very hard for us to be not just a community, but a country that still welcomes immigrants as critical to the growth of our economy. You know, we have always depended upon immigration for growth and advancement in this country, and the current climate makes it sometimes difficult to talk about it. But the Chamber is on the record and has been for some time in being wholly on board with sensible immigration reform and a solution for the Dreamers and many other things that support immigration.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. And part of it from the welcoming component is helping feel comfortable here, right? Is getting, is someone being able to say, wow, I've got a friend now. I know someone who I can call. I have a community. I know, you know, we talk a lot about that. We've interviewed a variety of leaders. Some of our most thriving large middle market businesses in this region are being led by international organizations. I don't know, Mary, if you're aware of this, but our search firm, Centennial, we represent clients from 16 countries. And about half of our business, a little less than half in the last couple of years, have been here in the greater Cincinnati region. The rest is really around the world. But when you look at organizations like Rheinstahl being led by Dieter Moeller and his family, you know, we talked in a previous episode, episode 27, about his father's journey that as an entrepreneur starting his business in his garage, Rheinstahl is one of the largest middle market companies in our community. A really good client of ours and longtime friend, Mehmet Yüksek, when he moved here from Istanbul to lead one of the largest middle market consumer packaged goods companies, Perfetti Van Melle, that he was at for many years, part of the strategy of corporate with our search firm was we want, as the search firm, we did not place him. He came from an internal promotion within Perfetti, but we wanted him to feel welcome here. We wanted him to know that this is a place. So connecting him and inviting leaders that we work with to events and, hey, this weekend, we're getting together with a group of people to go to a baseball game or a soccer game. And would you come with? We've got an extra ticket or two and would love to have you. Just building a community. What we find is that many of the closest friends that I've had over the years have been clients who aren't from here that we've connected with. I mean, I had the opportunity to meet Mehmet's mother, who on her first trip to the United States, and she also had tea with our kids and got to spend time with my children at my house. And again, I hope that through this journey and through these conversations that our listeners will say, you know what, I should go invite my friend Daniel, who's not from here, or Jim, or Sally, or Jose, or Stefana, to join our family this weekend, or to join me on a bike ride, or to just build relationships, right? Just to build relationships changes the world around you.
Well, it's one of the reasons why we created something with the African American Chamber and the five sort of international chambers here, in addition to us as the regional chamber. We created something in the last couple of years called STIR. That STIR with a screamer at the end, an exclamation point. And it is a multicultural networking reception. And that's the sole purpose. There is no program. People are invited to come to be able to meet people across cultures and communities. And it's always one of the most diverse rooms that we have in this community on a regular basis. But, you know, when you were talking, Mike, it reminded me, I think it's really important to say, in addition to the particular richness that a company that is maybe was founded on the other side of the globe and is now has operations here in Cincinnati, we have a really amazing roster of large global companies in this region that are major actors in our journey to a more inclusive community. And, you know, companies like Kroger and Fifth Third Bank and Procter & Gamble and Nielsen and Cintas and 8451, and I could go on, and I don't want to leave anyone out. Fidelity is another great example. Those companies are at best practice level when it comes to how they're thinking about inclusion. And we're learning from them, and then we're bringing them and other companies, mid-market companies, for instance, mm-hmm. together in powerful ways through our Diverse by Design initiative to make sure that the companies that are just starting the journey, perhaps, have an opportunity to accelerate the rate of change and development in their organizations. So we'll take a company like American Modern in Claremont County that says, gee, we think affinity networks might be important to us, and we don't know where to start. And we'll connect them with a company like Kroger, where they have not only used them to connect people, but to grow their business in certain segments of their markets and bring them together. And, you know, 2 years later, American Modern has 5 affinity networks. So we're using the power of those incredible companies and the generosity with which they share. The work that we do means that people check competition at the door. Mm-hmm. So I can have Deloitte on one side of the table and EY on the other, and they will be talking about how do we activate affinity networks in our company and in our community in a way that helps people deepen roots and really feel at home in this region.
That's great. That's great. Mary, in terms of other, when you're in a room of organizations that feel stuck, that feel like there's something else that they can be doing where they're not yet the leading class in this conversation, and they're really are challenged by how do we, are there a few other typical comments that you hear, any reservations that they have? What are they afraid of?
Oh, I think we're all afraid of stepping out and embracing the unfamiliar. You alluded to this earlier when you talked about that sort of the deep need we have to connect with our tribe. You know, our brains are wired to recognize people who look and behave like us, and it's very primal. So stepping out of that comfort zone requires intention, certainly, and a persistent willingness to deal with cognitive dissonance, to deal with that sort of flutter in your stomach. And I'm being very personal about it right now, but I think it translates to leadership roles as well, that we need to be able to engage in the tough conversations. A great example is what's happened across the country in the CEO action effort, where we have executives leaning into tough conversations that were prompted by the emergence of the Black Lives Matter movement, the continued deaths of unarmed young Black men at the hands of police, and a revelation, perhaps, or a moment of recognition on the part of executives that has an incredible effect on the employees in their ranks, and particularly the employees of color. And we can't leave those conversations at the door of the office anymore, because people are affected, their entire lives are affected by what's going on. And that's just one example. There are many others that we could use. So the willingness to have those tough conversations. So at the Chamber, we have something called Coffee and Conversation, and those are usually prompted by something that's happened in the world that we think is timely and has an urgency about it that requires a conversation. And sometimes we'll bring in someone from the community. So when the outcome of we don't have time, I think, to get into all the details, but when the outcome of a very closely watched trial here happened and there was a lot of disappointment in the community about the outcome, we brought in the opinion editor from the daily paper, the Cincinnati Enquirer, who was writing about this in a very deep way. And he helped us conduct a conversation about how everyone in the organization was feeling, and not everyone felt the same way. So it was a very interesting conversation, but we brought it in the House because that's a step along the way to saying, we get it. We know you cannot check your identity or a part of your identity at the door, and we understand that you might be in pain. The other thing that I say to others who are perhaps just starting the work or not sure where to go is it's really, while I said earlier that leadership from the top is critical to long-term success, I think, in building an inclusive organization, I want to be sure that people listening to this know that it is possible to lead from the middle. I've been leading from the middle of the table for most of my career. And in fact, when we first started this work at the Chamber, I sort of, you know, I felt like I'd sort of stuck my neck out and had it at risk for a little while. But it is really, you have to understand what you can do. And I'm not suggesting anyone be just cavalier in the way that they approach this. But it is possible to start something by simply changing your own behavior and starting to learn those skills for bridging the difference and helping to people feel more welcome. So if you manage a small team, you can change the way you approach that team, whether or not the organization as a whole has fully embraced the idea of diversity as a strength and inclusion as a must-have in a contemporary society. And so it really then comes back to the individual's ability to step up and say, I want to be a part of creating a better community, a better organization, and a better community.
That's wonderful. Thank you. I love the, it is possible to lead from the middle. What a great quote for us to rest on. We will provide in the show notes a link to STIR, the multicultural networking receptions that you host.
And to building cultural competence,
I hope, building cultural competency, yeah. Absolutely.
Because we'll be rolling that out this fall to 250 people at a time.
Yes, we will do that. And if you are, again, if you're in another city, these types of topics are things that you can take to your city, your chamber of commerce, your organization, and encourage this. And if you're in Greater Cincinnati, we encourage you to, how can the Building Cultural Competency Program, how can the program that the Chamber leads on hiring people with disabilities? They also have the Inclusive Chamber podcast that they're covering topics as well. So we'll provide several of these links in the show notes. Our hope is to raise awareness and to build connection and to create action. We'll also link to CEOaction.com. I know myself, I signed the pledge when this first came out. Probably a year and a half ago.
Yeah.
And as a small company, you know, we're not one of the large companies sponsoring the work, but we can certainly take an action to check in, speak up, and show up and identify blind spots and how we can make an impact on our community there. So thank you so much for, again, all of your leadership, your team's leadership, the volunteers, the organizations that support what all you're doing in big ways, and all of the organizations who support in small ways and showing up. Again, you are a great inspiration, and I really value your relationship and putting yourself out there. And that's the kind of leadership we should all be doing. We should all be putting ourselves out there more, leaning into conversations that may be uncomfortable, quote unquote, but this is what we're called to do. Forget being comfortable or uncomfortable.
Well,
let's lean into this
work.
And
let's be clear, when you do this, it leads to a better organization, but more important, a richer life.
For all. Yeah. Well, again, thank you to our listeners for joining us today, and we hope you enjoyed the conversation. I know Mary and I would both invite you to send us your thoughts. So feel free to send us emails, to use hashtag Talent Magnet on social media and tag a question. And Mary and I would be honored to get back to you and help you make a world a more engaging and vibrant life for all.
Thanks for joining us for this episode of the Talent Magnet Institute podcast. By now, you've probably heard of servant leadership, but did you know it's been proven to improve company culture, customer service, and reduce turnover on teams? Find out if your actions pass the servant leadership test at talentmagnetinstitutepodcast.com/SL. That's talentmagnetinstitutepodcast.com/SL.
The Talent Magnet Institute podcast is powered by Centennial, a talent strategy and executive search firm, and the Talent Magnet Institute. You can engage with us at Talent Magnet I on Twitter or Talent Magnet Institute on LinkedIn and Facebook. Please communicate by using hashtag Talent Magnet. Find us in your favorite podcast app to subscribe, rate, and leave a review, as well as share with a colleague. You can also listen at talentmagnetpodcast.com. Our podcast studio is based in Greater Cincinnati, Ohio. We are supported by our listeners, clients, and partners from all over the world. The Talent Magnet Institute podcast is made possible by a great team that includes Janelle Spence and Christine Lewis of Centennial, Josh Chappelle and Adam Smith of SoundPress, produced by Chris Madine of New Fidelity Studios, and Audra Casino and Megan Doherty of One Stone Creative. Music written by DJ Corbett and Chris Madine. And myself, your host, Mike Sipple Jr. Thank you for joining us on the journey of developing leaders to succeed in relationships, work, community, and life, reframing success in leadership.